You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned. And we are back for yet another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Maurice Killifer.
Susie Hunt.
And we are continuing along with our summer camp slasher movies with episode 59, The Final Girls. This is a horror comedy from 2015. It's one of those elusive PG-13 horror movies that everyone always seems to shit on, but it's fucking awesome. It's an hour and 28 minutes, and let's go around the table and see what everyone thought. Maurice, we'll start with you this week. What are your thoughts on this flick?
I really like this movie. As a matter of fact, I think I saw it when it first came out, but I saw it again within the last year.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I actually had to watch it today after I got out of work, because I tried watching it last night. And I fell asleep. I've been so tired.
Understandable. We're old.
Getting used to waking up in the morning again.
Right.
So, I was watching it today. And I was like, well, I just saw this. And I don't remember when. But it's within the last year. I recently rewatched it. But I like it. I mean, it's basically a spoof of Friday the 13th.
Oh, yeah.
Except it's in a time loop.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're in the movie. But, I mean, other than that, it's just a spoof of Friday the 13th. I do like the cast. The cast is really good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the killings, the killings in it were okay. Nothing we've never seen before. But
some of them were really funny.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, like the first one.
Yeah, one.
Yeah.
And we will get to it, but the one that looks like a death in the movie, but if you stay for the credits, it's not.
Right. That's all horror movies are.
Right.
They're back alive after the movie's over. But yeah, I mean, nothing special. Killing wise, but as you said, it was more entertaining than terrifying.
Right.
I really like the music choice. Music was good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah. Yeah, that's all I got.
Well, Susie, we'll toss it over to you. What are your thoughts on this?
I really enjoy this movie. Shane bought this for me for Christmas one year, and I think he also bought me Cooties.
Oh,
which is another great horror comedy.
He bought you Cooties or gave you Cooties?
Yes. And he bought these movies in an attempt, because I'm sure I've said it before, but like, horror is my thing. He doesn't like horror movies the way I do. Like, he's sat and watched them because, you know, when we were dating, I'm like, oh, I want you to know what I'm interested in. But he bought Final Girls and Cooties because that was a way, like, he likes comedies. So he thought horror comedy, which worked. And he actually watched this with me yesterday. I really enjoy this movie. I find it funny, entertaining. It really is like, it's like Friday the 13th meets The Burning meets Groundhog Day.
That's really fucking accurate.
I think the characters...
Or if we want to stick the horror, Happy Death Day.
Yes. I just find this movie very entertaining. The music is great. I love how they get, you know, stuck in the flashback, and it's just a funny movie. I mean, you have like the high school stereotypes. Mm-hmm. Gertie is like, I want to be her friend.
I was thinking when I was watching it, I'm like, I would have been Gertie's friend.
Yeah, I totally want to be friends with Gertie and Duncan. I probably would have dated Duncan, to be honest. But I just, it was, gets he, too,
he
go
was,
ahead.
He was trying really hard to date Max and get with Max.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I could be your Max. Well, in a past life.
I'll be your Huckleberry.
But I mean, if you haven't seen the movie, check it out. It's on, we watched it on demand on Showtime, but you can rent it on Amazon Prime for like $3.99. It's a short movie. It's a fun watch. So yeah.
I see. Now the thing that I love so much about this flick is it, much like films like Scream, it takes all of the tropes and just plays with them. Like, it puts them right out there on Front Street for you to see, like, hey, we're gonna do this trope. Like, they wink at the camera, acknowledge it, and just have fun with those tropes. Like, I mean, they call out so many of them, like the fact that Billy only shows up when people are having sex or the moment tits come out. You know, it's like, that's very accurate to the Friday the 13th series. You know, they play around with the whole, like, if you have sex in a movie, you're going to die. Only the virgin can be the final girl. Like, which a lot of movies have said that, but we will find in other films that there are plenty of non-virgins who are the final girl. But yeah, overall, this movie is just really fucking funny. It's a great horror comedy. And I honestly forgot just how funny it was until we rewatched it for the show. Now, this is one that I've owned for a while. I think it was like right after it came out on DVD, I bought it. And, you know, I remembered it being funny, but like watching it for the show, I was cracking up. Like there are several scenes. There's, like I said, there's one pseudo death scene that I damn near like cried. I was laughing so hard. Like I had to pause the movie because I just forgot how funny it was. But this is one of those things I would recommend to non-horror fans. Like, even if you're not big on slasher flicks, this is something worth watching. I mean, yeah, there's some gore, but it's very sparse. And what is, you know, what is there is very comical.
Exactly. Like after the, I don't want to give it away.
I know what you're going to say. So the director of this film is, Todd Strauss Schulson. The only thing I've seen of his is a very Harold and Kumar Christmas.
Oh my God. Yes.
But he also did a similar movie that was a Rebel Wilson movie, Isn't It Romantic, where she gets sucked into like a romantic comedy. So it's another similar kind of film to this where someone is trapped within a movie. I've never seen it, but I remember the commercials for it. So I was like, oh, okay. That's kind of funny that he did two movies like that. But the writer is, or one of the writers is Joshua John Miller. Now, he's the son of Jason Miller, the guy who played Father Karras in The Exorcist. But I guarantee you guys know this guy. He was the vampire kid in Near Dark. He was the bratty brother in Teen Witch. The one who was like, you're a dog. That's him. he also played Angel in Class of 1999, which I still want to get on the show one day. But so yeah, I was impressed because I'm like, wait a second, I know that name. And I clicked on it. I was like, holy shit, yeah, it's the guy from Teen Witch. So good on him. Wrote a good movie. But yeah, so let's get in the cast. We have Max Cartwright played by, I'm going to butcher her name. Was it Tisa Farmiga, the chick from American Horror Story, The Nun? She does a bunch of DC voice work like Justice League Dark and a few of the other direct-to-DVD DC cartoons. I'm sure I said her name wrong.
I think I'm not sure. And listeners, let us know how it is pronounced. I think it's Tessa Farmiga. Farmiga?
I have no clue.
Her sister plays Warren.
Right.
No, that's her mom.
No, it's her sister. She's 21 years older than her.
No, that's her mom. I think that's her mom.
I have no idea.
No, her parents' names are Michael and Luboy Myra.
Which really? I always thought that was her mom.
No, Vera is her older sister, 21 years her senior.
I have no clue. I got no dog in this race. Then we have Nancy / Amanda Cartwright, played by Malin Ackerman. She's in The Skulls, Witchblade, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. She plays, was it Silk Spectre in The Watchmen? She's on Children's Hospital. She does tons of voices for Adult Swim stuff like Robot Chicken. Then Chris Briggs, played by Alexander Ludwig. The Hunger Games, Bad Boys for Life, and Vikings. Vicky Summers, played by Nina Dobrev. We've seen her apparently in Repo the Genetic Opera. She was one of the background junkies. But she's in Family Guy, Robot Chicken, The Vampire Diaries, and the remake of Flatliners from 2017. That's one of those ones I kept meaning to watch, and it kind of slipped through the cracks for me. Gertie Michaels is played by Alia Shawkat. She's in Veronica Mars, The Runaways, Whippet, Robot Chicken, Broad City, Portlandia, Pee Wee's Big Holiday, a bunch of stuff. Then she does voices for Adventure Time and Big Mouth. And she was in a movie. I only wrote it down because of the name. I've never seen it. But there's a movie called Duck Butter that she's in. Oh. Which, yeah, for those of you that don't know, check it out on Urban Dictionary. Then we got Duncan, played by Thomas Middleditch. Again, bunch of voice work like Ugly Americans, Beavis and Butthead, the little reboot that they did. Rick and Morty, Bob's Burgers. He's in that new show, Solar Opposites.
That show is amazing.
Oh, I freaking loved that. I did watch all of that one. he's in a ton of like college humor and like Funny or Die skits. Like, in fact, a lot of the people on this are from those. Like, you'll see them in Funny or Die or College Humor. And then he was in Godzilla King of the Monsters and Zombieland Double Tap.
And he was in the King Kong movie.
Oh, was he in King Kong?
Yeah, he had a very minor role, but it's funny. He played in the King Kong movie
and then the Godzilla movie. That's funny. He's also the guy from the Verizon commercials for, 2 years? Which is funny.
Oh yeah, that's where I've seen him.
There's a cell phone service moment that made me laugh because I was like, hey, wait. That's kind of funny considering what he went on to do. Let's see. Yeah, then we got Kurt, played by Adam Devine. He was in Pitch Perfect, Arrested Development, did voices for American Dad, Steven Universe, and the Lego Batman movie, and then he's in Workaholics.
Which, if you have never watched Workaholics, watch it.
I have not. I've heard
nor
it's funny.
Have I.
Oh my God, it's really funny. I only saw the first, I think, two seasons, but there's this character, Jillian. We are soul sisters. There is an episode where she wants to go to the Gathering of the Juggalos. Or they end up going to the Gathering of the Juggalos. And she's like fucked up on like Faygo and drugs. And she's like yelling at this guy. She's like, you want to get this dong, that dong in this thong? That's my amazing. Favorite episode of Workaholics. Just, all right.
On
we go.
Then we got Tina, played by Angela Trimber. She was in Reno 911. She's in the Rob Zombie Halloween 2. She's on Community, Workaholics, and she actually is in one of the epic rap battles of history. She plays Cleopatra in the Cleopatra versus Marilyn Monroe episode.
I thought you were going to say Marilyn Manson.
No. And then we got Paula, played by Chloe Bridges. She was in the new 90210, The New Girl, and the remake of Charmed. Then Blake is played by Torian Thompson, the Michael Bay Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He's in Scream Queens, Lucifer, and Criminal Minds. Then the hunky hiker was played by Reg Robb. He's in Black Lightning and NCIS. And then let's see, Mimi was played by Lauren Gross. She was in American Horror Story and Logan. And then finally, Billy Murphy, played by Daniel Norris. He's in Into the Badlands, Sleepy Hollow, and then he does a shitload of stunt work for, like, a bunch of the Marvel movies. Like, he was in Civil War, Black Panther. Then he was in stuff like Creed 2 and Doom Patrol doing stunts. So, big stunt guy. But, I mean, I guess, you know, when you're casting for a slasher, you need a big, monstrous dude. So.
Doom Patrol's a really good show, too, if you haven't watched that.
You know, I haven't gotten into it yet. I know Jess is like obsessed with it. She loves it. She's been harping on me to watch that and Swamp Thing, and I need to get on both of those because I've only heard good things about some of the DC shows.
Man Thing, what?
that might be coming sooner than later. But yeah, so the plot for those that haven't
it may have got bumped.
Uh oh. Oh, we might have to talk after recording. But yeah, so for those of you that haven't seen it, the plot is Max and her friends reluctantly attend a tribute screening of an 80s slasher film that starred Max's late mother. They accidentally get
screening?
Sucked into... Screening. Wait, what?
I thought you said screaming, which would... I thought you said screaming, which would have made it even cooler.
Oh. No, I attend a tribute screening. Yeah, and they accidentally get sucked into the movie. They soon realize they're trapped inside the cult classic movie and must team up to with the ill-fated counselors to fight off Billy, the titular villain of the movie. And Max tries to save her mom. So it's an interesting plot. But we open up with the trailer for Camp Bloodbath, the film within the film.
Instead of singing Kumbaya, you'll be singing Kumbaya No.
You just messed with the wrong virgin. I love it. It's filled with cheesy one-liners. It's grainy footage. The film utilizes a very similar theme to Jason. Like, it does, like, the like, it does that sound. Mm-hmm. And it, that's actually important throughout the entire film. Like, we hear the Jason noise over and over again. But so we see, there's a scene with a head in a freezer in the trailer. She opens up the freezer, there's just a head, like, and she screams. I think
it's supposed to be the sexy hiker.
I thought it was Blake.
No, I think it was the sexy hiker.
Yeah, I think it was the sexy hiker because he didn't have an earring.
Oh, okay. Like, it honestly, I didn't pay that close of attention.
Actually, I made up names for some of the characters because I couldn't remember them. I mean, I remember Max. I remember Mom is Nancy, and then Vicky and Gertie. Then Duncan, I just kept calling Shaggy because he's kind of the Shaggy of the group.
Right.
Then there was Little Thor. L-I-L, Lil Thor.
Lil Thor.
With Chris. That was his name, right?
Yeah.
And then Ric Flair, because he had all that flair, pieces of flair, like from Office Space. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
And he had that sick-ass earring.
And those sweet-ass braces.
Yeah. I mean, if Duncan was dating someone and I was stuck in the movie, I would go for Ric Flair. And Kurt, he's just douchebag.
He's the cherry thief.
My God.
Oh, God. We'll get to that. But so we pan out from the trailer and we see a young teenage girl watching the trailer on her phone, sitting in a parked car. This is Max. She looks down at some headshot photos of her mom, Amanda Cartwright, who's an actress. And on the back of the photos is a resume. Now, I paused it to try to get all the things listed on there, but thankfully I found a list online. I won't read them all off.
Chopping Mall.
Yes, Chopping Mall. It says she also played a bipolar mistress in several episodes of CSI Crime Scene Investigation. She played Carol King in Sleigh Bells, Jessica Albert in Chopping Mall, Barbara Macy in Stepmom 2 Revenge of Diane, Monica Stinn in Coen Massacre, and then Amanda Hart in the film adaptation of Heart to Heart.
Oh my God.
There's Meatballs in Heaven and Summer in Paradise. Like, there's some really funny ones on there.
Well, Meatballs in Heaven and Summer Paradise, I feel that might be like a late night Skinamax movie.
Right. It came on right after Red Shoe Diaries.
Right.
I mean, I am in heaven when I eat meatballs.
This is true.
So.
Oh, man. So that, we see Max kind of smiling at the photo, and she looks up and she sees her mom walking toward the car, who looks really stressed out and disappointed. She gets in the car and she looks at Max and says, "Well, they'll let me know." And Max goes on to tell her she's too good for that role anyway. And, Amanda laments about how the casting director recognized her. And she was like, "Oh, well, maybe you saw me, you know, on the several episodes I did of CSI. And then he was like,
"My story arc."
Yeah. He's like, "No, Camp Bloodbath." And she goes, it's been 20 years since I've done that movie and it still haunts me. So basically, like, she got typecast and people don't want to put her in new stuff. So they leave to go get some food. And while they're driving, Max is going over the bills while her mom seems focused on some schmuck that was supposed to take her away for the weekend.
Wasn't his name Ted?
I think it was Ted. And, you know, like, Max is kind of being the adult here while Amanda is very flippant and seems, honestly, like the teenager. And Max points out that they need to figure out how they're going to pay the bills. Amanda grabs a stack of bills and just throws them out the window with a manic look on her face. Max is like, what the fuck? Like, just looks at her mom, like, freaked out. Her mom has no cares. And then suddenly...
She goes, our song is playing.
Yep.
And she turns the radio up, and it's Betty Davis Eyes. And she starts, like, lip-syncing and singing, you know, like, dancing in the car. And I mean, come on, we've all done that.
Except
I don't lip-sync. I sing loud and proud.
Same.
And then they're driving, and, like, Max finally starts to smile and starts, like, playing along with mom. And then the lyrics change. So it goes from Betty Davis Eyes... to Max spilled a drink and mom dies. That sounded more like a Mentos commercial jingle. No retakes. It's my own interpretation.
That's amazing.
She spilled the drink and mom died.
It's like, it is like Mentos, the fresh maker.
Yeah.
The death maker. But she looks at her mom and she's like, you're such a dork. And then she's like, she says to her, she goes, you know, everything in my life I got wrong, but you, I got right. And they start, like, limp syncing and dancing and all that. And then, yeah, Max spills her drink on the headshots. And she's like, Max, those are so expensive. And she took her eyes off the road for a split second. And then just boom, another car hits them. They fucking skid and turn, like, it's side over side, but they roll. The whole car rolls several times and ends up on its roof. And then you pan out, seeing the accident. We go to a black screen. We get the title card. And then 3 years later, we hear an alarm ringing. And we pan in on Max sleeping in a bed. She's turning off the alarm clock, looking dazed. And now she kind of goes through her morning routine in, like, a bit of a zombified state. Like, we see her get in the shower. She gets dressed. Then she's watching a video of her mom and her when she was a little girl.
And then dancing in the backyard, which is one of the last things that she said to her mom.
Yep.
Was about them dancing. I mean, plot. Mm-hmm. But mom's eyes were really not on the road at all.
I know. You know how often I notice that in films where it's like people are having conversations and they can't seem to have a conversation while still looking at the road. Like, they have to keep looking over at the person they're talking to.
Right.
And it's like, I've had plenty of conversations where I don't look over. Like, I'm looking at the road and I'm still talking to the person sitting next to me. But anyway, so we hear her aunt yells up. She says, Gertie is here. And Max says, okay, Aunt Pauline. So we know now that she's clearly living with her aunt and mom is dead. We cut to Max and Gertie in the car. And Gertie is talking about this boy named Chris who is helping Max study. And Gertie is convinced that Chris likes her now that he's broken up with his ex, Vicky, who had a Facebook meltdown post, much to the amusement of Gertie. She just kept going on about how much she loved that post.
And the way she asks her, she says, so did he say, do you want to study? Or did he say, hey? Or no, do you want to come study? Or did he say, hey, do you want to come study?
Yep. Oh, Gertie is dirty. So they head off to the study date. We meet Chris and they're discussing Greek mythology, particularly the story of Persephone, who is kidnapped by Hades and brought to the underworld. Foreshadow. That's pretty poignant. So Gertie mentions to Max that she should be taking notes, and Chris awkwardly mentions how she can copy his notes or just have them. And Gertie and Max smile while Chris sputters and stumbles, looking really embarrassed. So then Duncan arrives at the diner and runs up to Max, asking if she had received any of his messages. Duncan is Gertie's stepbrother, and she is eternally embarrassed by him. There's this whole back and forth, and I didn't write it down, but she's like mocking him. He's like, you know, Gertie, when my dad told me that I was going to have a stepsister, I was so excited I cried. I've always wanted a little sister. And he's like, but not like this. I can't remember. There was like this back and forth, but his reaction to her teasing him was priceless. So basically he tells her, he shows her a flyer, and it's for Camp Bloodbath 1 and 2. And it's like a one night only screening. And she really doesn't want to go. And he tells her how, when he told all of the other bathmaticians that his sister's best friend is Max Cartwright, the daughter of Amanda Cartwright, who played Nancy, you know, they freaked out. And Chris is like, bathmaticians? And he goes, oh yeah, no, it's like the totally cool name that, you know, we have for people who are fans of Camp Bloodbath. And Gertie's like, you know, it's not a cool nickname if you give it to yourself.
I love her.
I know, she's so cool. But, so Duncan continues to gush about how, you know, him and his fellow fanboys would just absolutely love it if she could make it. Max still isn't interested, and she's like, tell your little cult that I, you know, maybe I'll see them next year. And she gets up and starts walking away. Duncan offers to do all of her classic assignments for the rest of the year, and he tells her he knows that she's failing, and he can make sure she passes.
And graduates.
So, yeah. So now it's like, you know, we zoom in on Max's face, we cut outside of the theater, she's standing there watching the crowd gather. Gertie comes up and accidentally scares her, and they head toward the theater talking about Chris and how much Gertie thinks that he likes her. Then suddenly, Chris shows up unexpectedly, and he says he's there for moral support. Gertie excuses herself while they chat, and Chris makes a comment pointing at the poster about, wow, your mom was really hot.
And he says, was that weird to say? And she's like, yeah.
Yeah, you don't say that.
Because it's also the 3rd anniversary of her death.
Right. It's like, come on now.
Your dead mom was a MILF.
Oh, God, what was his name? I was just going to say, or according to the mortician in Friday the 13th, part 4, she still is.
Yeah. Right?
Axel. That was his name. I'm like, Axel, what the hell is his name? But, so yeah, so they're kind of standing there talking about the anniversary of her mom's death, and he's like, you know, I don't really know what to say. She's like, yeah, neither do I. And then out of nowhere, Chris's ex, Vicky, the one who had the Facebook meltdown, shows up with her new boyfriend, Tyson, and she's going on and on about how, oh, he's so funny, and he just had to come to this show, and, you know, she didn't really want to go, but he just had to come. He wouldn't shut up about it. And Chris is like, yeah, you sure you didn't see my tweet about it? And she's like, I would even follow you. You lost followers, by the way. So she's a fucking stalker. Now we cut to inside, and the group is standing around talking. Tyson is suddenly gone, and Vicky is now standing with the group. And they're like, so what happened to Tyson? And she's like, oh, he got, like, super sick super fast. And Vicky's like, oh, I hate it when people get super sick super fast. She's so cool. But Chris goes, he says he's going to go get some popcorn and M&Ms for him and Max. And Vicky places her order with him. She's like, oh, get me this, this, and then, like, I forget what all the stuff she said, but it was like this obnoxiously long order. And then she goes, oh, never mind, I'll come with you. You'll forget like always. So Gertie and Max kind of watch Vicky as she desperately tries to win back Chris. And Gertie goes, she's probably going to pee on him to mark her territory. And then Duncan shows up all excitedly and asks Max to be part of the Q&A. She turns him down, and he's like, I'll put you down as a maybe. And then he runs off, he mimics the standee of Billy holding up two machetes, and tries to hop over the little velvet rope, and trips on it and falls spectacularly. That scene, it's dumb physical comedy, but it gets me every time.
Agreed.
So we cut to the full theater. We see the movie starting, everyone cheers, and, you know, we're kind of cutting back and forth between reactions of the crowd and what's going on the screen. We see Max seeing her mom, and she smiles. Now, in the movie, we hear the backstory of Billy, how the counselors played a prank on him, they threw some firecrackers in the outhouse that he was hiding in, and Billy was horribly burned. So basically, hodgepodge of, like, Jason and Cropsey, where it's like, the kids were teasing Billy. Instead of the kids pulling a prank on a counselor or someone who worked at the camp, it was the counselors pulling a prank on the kid, and he got horribly burned. So kind of a weird mix of the two. But the things in the movie start and things in the movie and things in the theater start to mimic one another. We see Nancy in the film lights a Zippo to light some candles, and in the theater we see some hipster lighting a blunt. That we see on the screen, it's like it's supposed to be the sex scene between Nancy and Kurt, and he comes in and he's got the cherry tattoo on his arm, and she's like, I like your tattoo, and he's like, yeah, I got it in juvie. It's because I'm a cherry thief. I steal cherries.
He's so lame.
Everything out of his mouth is just fucking ridiculous.
Well, I love it because they show Duncan. He's like, the writing is so bad. Like, he's just so happy about it. I was like, oh, God, Duncan is one of us, isn't he?
Yep.
But so we cut out from that. And we see Kurt take a swig of beer, and then we cut out to a guy in the audience taking a swig from what I'm guessing is pure rubbing alcohol because of what happens next.
Seriously, Shane was like, what the fuck are they drinking? I'm like, I don't know, gasoline, I think.
Yeah, right?
Because I'm like, this should not be that flammable. But
also, can we just stop and think about the simpler times when we could go to the movies?
I know, right?
And what that was like. Good times, man, good times.
I mean, I know theaters are reopening, but I'm not going to be going anytime soon.
No, we're not.
Yeah, what's that, Maurice?
They're not opening here.
No, I know, but like, they are opening. Like, I got that thing on the Regal app. They were like, in 7 days, we'll be reopening certain locations. I was like,
in New York.
Yeah. Oh no. But that's what I'm saying. Like, even once they start opening here, I ain't going anytime soon.
Yeah, no, thank you. I will rewatch Gilmore Girls over and over again until I feel safe to go to a movie theater.
I might have to go to the drive-in though to go see New Mutants in a couple weeks.
I would want to go do that. Like, I've been trying to find a night I could go to the drive-in, because as much as, you know, and don't get me wrong, I love the drive-in, you know, but I miss terribly going to an actual movie theater. Like, that was one of my fun things.
Well, now you have a kid, so you can't go to the drive-in and start necking with your wife because his evil twin brother is going to come out and start killing people.
Oh, no.
And we all know how that ends up.
I was hoping you would go there.
We know how it ends up.
As soon as you started saying it, I'm like, oh, she's going to Blood Raids. Let me see how this plays out.
I am. Oh, I went there, and I came back to tell the tale.
Oh, that's awesome.
Also, poor Billy got horribly burned and had mud butt. so much mud butt in horror movies. Like, how do people... I don't understand. That's probably why they all die after horribly disfigured.
I'm starting to think, like, that's as much of a staple in slasher movies as tits and blood. You know, people getting mud butt. It's like almost in every slasher movie we've seen.
Yeah.
I agree.
Let's see if next week's episode has mud butt. We'll have to be looking for it.
I will be on mud butt alert. Dubiously.
So the guy takes his big swig of whatever he's drinking, the pure rubbing alcohol, and he drops it when he goes to hand it off to the next person. He drops it and it immediately turns into a CGI bottle and rolls away, spilling alcohol as it goes. And then it shatters on these, on these drapes along the side of the movie theater. And so we cut back on screen, and we see Max's mom is about to get some. And Kurt goes, nice legs, when do they open? This is so bad. And then Max is like, oh, I can't watch this. And she gets up to go walk away. The hipster ashes his frickin' blunt, and the cherry falls down and lights... immediately ignites the alcohol. It's a fucking blaze. So the whole place lights up quick. The crowd panics. Everyone's trying to escape. We see a cosplayer dressed as Billy drop his machete, which apparently was real. So I'm like, wow, that really wouldn't happen now. Like, you ain't bringing a real weapon into a theater.
No.
So the group find themselves trapped, and Max asks Duncan if there's an exit behind the screen. He tells her that there is. So she grabs the machete. The group runs up toward the screen. On screen, we see Billy raise his machete as Max raises hers. She slashes the screen as Billy slashes her mom in the movie. White light pours out from behind the screen. The group run in. Max takes one last look at the smoke-filled theater and runs in as well, and we get a white screen. When Max opens her eyes, it's a brightly lit and overly colorful forest. Now, did you notice the color changes for everything, like including them? Like everything
is vibrant?
I thought that was a pretty cool touch. So she looks around, and one by one, we see Chris and Gertie, Duncan and Vicky all show up. And then they see someone is coming, and we see it's the van from the start of the film. So like from Camp Bloodbath. So the van stops next to them, and we see the characters of the movie inside, and Tina leans out the window and asks, do you guys know how to get to Camp Bluefinch? And Duncan blurts out, he's like, Tina! And then he immediately covers his mouth, and she's like, yeah? She excitedly looks at him, and everyone just kind of stops and doesn't say anything, and then she kind of gets weirded out, and they slowly just drive away in silence. It's a very fun, awkward moment. And then Max says she thinks she's having a psychotic episode. Chris says it has to be just a dream. Maybe it's a collective dream. And then Duncan speaks up. He said, if it is a dream, there's a strong chance that my dad's going to come up to us naked and offer us some pecan pie. But don't take any. It's not pecan pie. And then Gertie vomits.
Stupid.
I mean, I would too.
I'm thinking to myself, like, what was it? Was it poop pie? What was it? But anyway, it's a
that's nice... nasty.
Cleveland joined the show. But yet it says 92 minutes later, and they're kind of wandering around the forest. And then I don't know who said it, but someone said, maybe we're dead and this is heaven. And then someone else goes, this can't be heaven. Max is here and she's Jewish. And they go, oh, right. Well, maybe it's Jewish heaven. Just stupid dialogue. But we see the van approach again. It's the same scene. They ask how to get to Camp Bluefinch, and Chris directs them this time. And then Gertie goes, we're not dead, we're insane. And Duncan goes, no, we're not, and I don't think we're in the valley anymore. And he sets his watch. And then another 92 minutes pass. They're all complaining about not having cell service, which, like I said, was kind of funny because considering, you know, Thomas Middleditch's work for Verizon. So Duncan is counting down, watching his watch. And then right on cue, the van shows up again. Duncan goes up to him and pretends that they're also counselors. So when Tina asks for directions, he's like, oh, yeah, we could totally show you the way, but we need a ride. So Duncan hops in and excitedly, like, waves the others in, who climb in reluctantly. And we get Kurt being a dick. He's like, so where's all your luggage? And he's like, you know, because I hope that's not all the clothes you brought. He's like making fun of their clothes. And Vicky goes, says the guy in the half shirt. And he's like, what'd you say? What, you guys poor? I was like, he's such a dick.
Don't so worry, he gets his.
Spectacularly. And then in the back of the van, Nancy wakes up. And Max and Nancy kind of meet for the first time. And it's a sad moment. Like, you know, Nancy thinks that Max looks upset because she's like, oh, first time away from your parents? And she's like, yeah. And then she starts, you know, a tear rolls down her cheek. It's like, I forgot how depressing this movie is in moments.
Yeah.
It's a lot of really touching, sad scenes. But as they arrive at Camp Bluefinch, we see the Camp Bloodbath title card swoop by and like a bird lands on it, which is kind of a fun touch. But that's the other thing. Like, I don't know if we're explaining this properly, but in the movie, like, they're inside the film. So all the lettering and like title cards are like physical objects that fly by them. So I thought that was really cool. But yeah, so as they get out of the van, they see Mimi walk by. Oh, I'm sorry. First, they get out of the van. Duncan is super excited. Everyone else seems really freaked out. You know, Tina's like, best summer ever. And she's all dancing around excitedly.
Tina is so fucking extra. Like, usually I hate characters like that because they're just like horrible hot messes. But for some reason, I just find her entertaining because she's just so like hypersexual and Like, I just want to fuck this dirt. I want to fuck this tailpipe. I got my Walkman on. I'm just going to fuck this side view mirror.
Yeah, she's quite the mess.
She is, but she does have an insecurity. Everybody has an insecurity.
Yep.
She's like, what? Does he not like me because I have small boobs?
Right. that line delivery later is so damn funny.
But... And then just when, which we'll get to, but then what happens with Tina is just fucking hilarious. Like the culmination of all of her pent up sexual yes. energy that she doesn't release by fucking inanimate objects in the ground.
Exactly. So we see Mimi walks by and asks, anyone want to help me pick some strawberries? And Kurt's like, nope, but I'll give you a hand with those melons. And then he walks by and he goes talking about her boobs. You guys get me right? And then once again, Duncan's like, I love it. The dialogue's so terrible. So Mimi goes off in the woods and everything is right on schedule. They discuss how she's going to get killed because everyone in the movie that has sex dies. So they're like, we got to do something. And Vicky's like, fuck it. We need to just leave. So Vicky, Gertie, and Duncan go to ask Kurt for the keys to the van. He wants to know what's in it for him. So he's like, you know, looking her up and down. And she's like, how about my friends don't kick your ass? And he looks at Duncan. He goes, that's your friend? And he starts cracking up. And he goes, I'll give you the fucking bicep smash. And he's like, that's a karate move. He's such a dick.
Was this before or after he's like flexing and Nancy's like touching his arm. And she's like, oh, he's like, yeah, it's hard, isn't it? You want to feel the back? That's really hard, too.
This was after that. So Kurt tells them, he's like, if they can find the keys, they can use the van. And then he hucks them into the woods and goes, oops. So they're like, why would you do that? And Vicky goes, I'm glad you die. And he looks scared. He goes, wait, what? And they just walk away.
No, because then Max says, or no, Duncan's one of them. I think it's Duncan says she means eventually we all die.
Right. That's true.
And then they're like deuces.
And then we see Max goes and talks to her mom, you know, and Nancy's telling her about how Kurt really wants to do it later. And they pan over and he's like, wasn't he like just flexing for some reason?
Yes.
I can't remember what he was doing, but and Max is like, you shouldn't have sex. And she goes, why? She goes, I heard it could kill you. She goes, Max, sex isn't anything to be afraid of. I mean, Tina's already done it twice today, and look at her. She's totally normal.
And she's like doing a charo dance. She's like, goochie, goochie, goochie.
Well, she was freaking on Chris, and who just stood there looking super uncomfortable, like looking all around him.
Like, I will fuck this statue man.
Oh, poor Chris. He looked so scared. But Chris comes over to get Max, and Max tells Nancy to keep her shorts on. And then she goes, or she and Chris go to look for the others. Nancy is looking over the like little checklist on the clipboard, and she realizes that none of them are on the counselor list, and she wants to know where they came from. So then we cut to the group in the woods looking for the keys. They see Mimi in the woods, and then the hiker comes up and starts flirting. And they all realize what's going to happen. And Duncan, like, keeps them from interfering. He goes, think of them as animals on a nature preserve. And he gets, like, all excited as watching it. The rest are super disturbed. And they're like, I can't believe we're just going to watch someone get killed. And then Billy shows up, complete with Jason music, grabs the hiker's head and twists it around, killing him. And then Mimi turns around and goes, okay, where's the beef?
Yeah, right, because they're making out. And she's, like, moaning like he's already...
inner.
Yeah. I don't know why. Well, I hesitated. I'm pretty crass on this show. But like he's giving her, you know, the shocker. And then she's like, hang on, I want you to get ready.
Right.
She turns around, she's like, peekaboo. And then bye-bye. Bye-bye. Yep. Strawberry fields, not forever.
That's all right. She eventually finds the beef. Just not the beef she's looking for.
Truth. So, yeah, Billy comes up and kills Mimi.
Were you going to call him Beefy?
I was going to call him Beefy, yes. So Beefy from was a Phantom of the Paradise.
No knee jobs in this movie, though.
No. So he kills Mimi, and then they all start to run because Billy turns and looks at him. And Duncan stops and tries to convince him that they'll be okay because they're not part of the film. And he's like, He's like, look, look, he doesn't know what to do with us because we're not part of the movie. We're not scripted in this. We're going to be fine. And he goes, I wonder if like all these people running around have just like corn syrup in their veins. Like, you know, like they're all just, you know, it's all make-believe. And then he reaches down and goes, all right, let's try this.
And they all look mortified. They're like, no, don't do it. And he's like, okay, so that, that's blood.
Yeah, he goes, that's blood. Like, he just looked so horrified. And then Duncan goes to take a selfie with Billy. He's like, selfie time. And Billy starts to approach him. So Duncan gets freaked the fuck out. And, you know, understandably so. Billy is standing there looking at him and Duncan is kind of cowering. Then Billy slowly turns and walks away. And Duncan and the group look relieved. And he's like, oh my God. And he's like, I almost peed my pants. And Gertie's like, you did pee your pants. And he looks down, and then out of nowhere, a machete comes flying in from off frame and stabs him in his side, like hacks him in the side. And Duncan just kind of looks up and he falls down dead. The rest of the group run back to the camp screaming. And as they run to the group, they pass or run to the camp. They pass by Blake and Tina. And Blake says, where are you going? You're going to miss the slumber party. And Tina yells, yay, you're back. And then they continue running. The scene loops and they run past them again and they can't escape. So every time they try to run off in a different direction, they just loop right back around to the camp. So they can't get away. We do a smash cut to the counselors sitting in a circle singing Michael, Row Your Boat Ashore. And Tina is singing like the sexy version.
Yes. She's like shaking her tits. And like, that's like a Jesus song.
Right. She was licking her lips and shit.
You don't turn the Jesus song into a sexcapade.
Oh, Jesus Tina
doesn't
does.
Like that. Jesus doesn't like that.
Oh my God. Yeah, that scene had me cracking up.
Oh my gosh, she's so fucking extra, but she's so funny.
I love her. But then Gertie is quietly freaking out about Duncan. Vicky wants to know where the hell the weapons and tools are. And then Paula shows up.
Vicky's like, where do you keep the chainsaws? Because I feel that's a good thing to know where the chainsaws are.
That's actually coming up, because first she goes, we need weapons, we need tools, we need something. But when she's talking to Paula later, she brings up the
chainsaws. That's right. That's right.
So Paula shows up and they're like, wait, that's the final girl. And they're like, we need to just make sure that we're around her because she, you know, she lives. And they decide as they watch her coming up. They decide they're each going to stick with a counselor and make sure no one has sex. So no
one keeps their clothes on.
Yes. So we get, Max obviously goes with her mom. Chris gets Kurt. Vicky gets Tina and Gertie gets Blake. So outside we see Kurt looking at a Playboy with Chris. Now there is a word in here that I don't say. So I'm just going to skip over that. But, you see Kurt go, and he's like, oh, whoa, look at the pair on her. And he goes, I would just motorboat those for hours. And Chris, like, he goes, yeah, but look at those articles. I could read those all night long. And he goes, what are you, and he says a very horrible word for a gay person, so I'm not going to repeat it here. I'm sure you guys know what I'm talking about. He goes, you don't like some nice big hoots? Hooting? And then Chris goes, okay, my dads are gay, so shut the hell up. And he gets right in his way. He goes, yeah, right. Gay guys can't have kids. They're too busy going to discos and having sex with each other. It's actually a really cool lifestyle when you think about it. Like, that cracked me the fuck up. Because he turned so quick. Like, it's actually really cool. I'm kind of jealous. But we cut to Gertie and Blake. And Blake is telling, like, he's got pins, like you said, Ric Flair. He's got Flair all over his suspenders. And he notices Gertie has a little pin and he comments on it. And she's like, oh, yeah, it was this place where you could kind of make them yourself. And, you know, it was my own design. And he loves that. Like, he's suddenly he likes Gertie. So
she tells him that she made it at a prison pen pal thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he's got a thing for Gertie now.
Well, because it's Gertie. She's dirty and nerdy.
Dirty nerdy Gertie
getting like, down on his birdie.
It's like a puppy monkey baby.
Dirty Nerdy.
She wants she wants that beef.
Oh, man.
But then we cut to Vicky and Tina. And Tina is trying to put Vicky's iPhone in the cassette player. And she's like, what's wrong with this cassette? It doesn't have any holes. She grabs her phone from her. And then Vicky takes their Tina takes Vicky's Adderall. And Vicky snatches it out of her hands and yells at her. She goes, bad. Not for you. Very bad. And Tina looks like a shamed dog and puts her headphones on watching her and kind of scoots away into the corner dancing.
Like, she might as well have, like, stuck her nose in some shit.
The physical comedy that both her and Kurt put out in this movie were great. But then we cut back to Kurt and Chris, and Kurt just wants to bang everyone, including Max. And he goes, are you guys having sex? Because if not, I wouldn't mind bench pressing her with my dumbbell. Then Chris grabs Kurt by the neck and he goes, listen, brah, you're not bench pressing anyone with your dumbbell. If I so much as hear your dumbbell took a Pilates class, I'm going to cut it off.
Which is funny because I don't think they had Pilates in the 80s. So,
right, because Kurt goes, what?
Yeah, he looks confused. He's like, huh?
And then we cut to Vicky and Paula is talking about all the booze she swiped for the party. And that's when Vicky's like, so where do we keep the chainsaws? And she's like, it's a slumber party. You know that, right? Because she's like, I think it would be good to know that. But then we cut to Gertie and Blake, and we get another awkward conversation between them where there's a little something, something. And there's, what was it, like a twig snapped or something behind them. And Gertie's like, oh, let's go. And they take off.
Yes.
And then we cut to Nancy in the bedroom spraying perfume around her. And Max comes in downstairs and she hears the Jason noise, meaning Billy is coming. So Max goes running upstairs and interrupts her mom from having sex. And Nancy's all embarrassed. She's like, Max, get out of here. She's like, Kurt's coming in here. And she's closing up her shirt. And Max tries to convince her. She's like, you can't have sex. And then Kurt comes in half-dressed with his fly undone, his shirt's off, and he's holding a beer. And he's like, hey, twofer. Like, he's such a pig. And he starts shimmying his pants down.
And he's wearing these awful purple whiteies, purple tighty whiteies.
Right, like the old Calvin Kleins. And he starts shaking them down. And they're like, Kurt, you need to put your clothes back on. And he's like, too late. Genie's already out of the bottle. And they both go, ew. like,
because then, really creepy, he whispers, make a wish.
Yeah, oh, that's right. I forgot about that. It's so gross. But anyway, so then Chris comes in downstairs.
Well, before that happened, I forgot who said it, but he said something, or somebody said something about a needle dick, and he said it's more like a hammer dick, if anything.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Was it Tina that said that?
It was Paula when they meet Paula.
I forgot
to write that down. Yeah, because they all come out and they talk to Paula, and she's like the badass.
I wrote that part. Yeah, I wrote that down because I thought it was funny.
Yeah,
funny as hell.
He's talking about so you can sleep in my bunk, and she said something about needle dick, and he's like, it's more like a hammer dick, if anything. He's all embarrassed, but So Chris comes in downstairs, and we hear. He and Gertie both now hear the Jason sounds. Chris goes running upstairs to find Max. Gertie backs up looking scared. And out the window behind her, we can see Billy watching. Chris bursts in on Nancy, Max, and pantless Kurt. And then we hear a sudden scream from downstairs. Everyone goes running back down. Gertie says she saw Billy out the window. She's like, I saw him. They're like, Billy? Billy who? And then she's like, tell him, Max. And then Nancy goes, wait, Billy Murphy? He's just a legend. And then Tina goes, oh, I love legends. Loch Ness, Bigfoot, Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
I love all of them. And then she gives this big toothy grin.
Yep.
And then Nancy starts telling the tale. And it's like they're all entranced. It's like they're in like a Broadway production of Jesus Christ Superstar when I don't know what song it would be. But they just all kind of like walk in unison, entranced, into the living room and sit down while Nancy says, it all happened so long ago.
And then we see the film, like the actual world around them, start to melt into these weird like strands of like see-through goop.
And they're like, what's going on?
And it like encircles them. And then suddenly they're in black and white. And Gertie goes, why am I colorblind? Am I having a stroke?
And Max... this is when the car pulls up and almost hits them. And they trip over the summer of 57 sign. Right. Or no, is that later when Nancy's in there with them?
That's later.
Yep. Okay. Damn it. I gave a spoiler away. I'm sorry, guys.
Well, we see they're kind of standing there in this black background, and we hear Lollipop playing as this car comes pulling up with a bunch of guys in it. And we see on the ground, like I said, the lettering is like a physical object. And we see summer 1957, like laying on the ground. And then Max says, we're in a flashback. And then they hear Nancy's voiceover, like talking over them, talking about Billy being bullied and all that. And we cut over and we see Billy getting tormented by the other kids. And he runs and locks himself in the outhouse. And then the guys all get out of their car and they come over and, they start to go over to break up the fight or to get Billy out of the outhouse. That's what it was. And then we see Chris and the others kind of follow. And that's when they step over the summer of 1957.
Right.
So we see that it's like, you know, a physical object there. And the counselors are like, I know how to get him out. And they light some firecrackers because, you know, this is a good idea to throw firecrackers into a fucking outhouse. And they throw them in there.
Right, with all that methane gas from the poop?
Right. They throw him in there and we hear Billy screaming bloody murder. He's horribly burned. We cut to a burn ward at a hospital. So now the whole group is just kind of transported to the burn ward. We see Billy like in bandages, just like seething with anger. And then we cut to Billy in a shack carving his mask.
It's a shanty.
What would make it a shanty versus a shack?
Okay, so if this is kind of a like spoof on Friday the 13th, Billy's got a way nicer shack than Jason does.
True, his is more the wrong turn cabin.
Right, like he's got some, we'll see later, he's got some red curtains, causes some nice mood lighting. Like he's really spruced the place up. Jason was just like, all I need are dead animals to fucking eat and my mother's head.
Jason was living a little more simply.
He didn't realize the potential. He too could have had a sprawling resort shanty like Billy Murphy.
With mood lighting.
With mood lighting, yeah. He just didn't have the right decorator.
So we see him carving out his mask, and then we cut to Billy walking into a cabin with a bunch of bunk beds with the sleeping counselors. He's wearing his mask, and he has a machete. And then we hear the voiceover say that Billy killed 8 counselors that night, one for each month he spent in the burn ward. And on the last victim that Billy slashes, Gertie is sprayed with blood. And, you know, then the flashback ends. And
I love this. I'm choking thinking about this scene.
Oh, it's, again, the physical comedy is fantastic. They cut back to the little story circle, and the group is standing there, but Gertie still has blood all over her face.
And they're all looking at her mortified, like, what the fuck happened to you?
I love the look particularly on Kurt's face because his bottom lip is like pooped out. He just looks, he looks really funny. The counselors, now they panic and run the fuck out of the cabin. And Paula and Kurt climb into her car and start driving away. Max is trying to explain to the others that they can't leave and that they need to kill Billy. And now Max and Nancy are there's a brief moment where they're talking and Max says to her, look, I'm trying to save you. She goes, why are you trying to save me? And she goes, well, because you're my, and then she pauses and says, my first friend here. And she just, Nancy kind of looks at her like with this confused look. We see Paula and Kurt speeding away. Kurt is freaking out inside the car. And then Duncan walks out of the woods with the machete.
I'm not dead yet.
Well, he even says, help me, I'm not dead. And he's got the machete still embedded in his side. Paula hits him, killing Duncan. Kurt screams like bloody murder.
The whole time, too. And I really recommend that if you haven't seen this movie or if you haven't just haven't sat through the credits, watch the cut scenes in the credits.
Oh, yeah.
This whole time, Kurt is like trying to make Paula like take him somewhere so they can fuck.
Right. Because he goes, oh, you killed Duncan. And he goes, let's just go to a hotel and relax for the night. And maybe we can get into something, you know. Like, he changes so quick.
And he just, like, rolls his eyes like, you know, like, maybe I'll trip and fall. My dick will land in your vagina.
then, oh, my God. So while he's saying that, Paula, like, hits one of the totem poles that, like, lead up to the sign Camp Bluefinch. She crashes into that, and we just see Kurt fly out the window to his death.
He lands and he bends backwards in half.
Like, everything looks broke. He lands on his face. It's great. Oh, man. So then Max yells, Paula, and like freaking out. And then, like, oh, God, I hope she's still alive. And then the car just blows up.
Do you know what's interesting? I read that the car crash at the beginning was completely CGI. And it was 100% practical with the Paula and Duncan crash.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I mean, although I imagine it would be easier to do the just crashing straight into a totem pole than, you know,
right.
rolling a vehicle. I know that's definitely got to be difficult.
I thought you were going to say robocopping a vehicle, which is, I mean, I guess it could be the same thing.
Robocopping. Murphy. But yeah, so the car blows up. The counselors panic. And Vicky tells them, like, Vicky kind of just blurts out. She's like, you know, they're not real. This is just a movie. None of you are real. And then, like, the group looks, like, confused and, you know, understandably so. And we cut to the group explaining the whole idea that it's a movie. And this is where we see Tina is now wearing a life jacket with oven mitts duct taped over her hands.
And she's, like, pawing at herself, like, guys? Guys? What? And this is when we learned about Operation Booby Twap.
Oh, well, not quite yet. There's a whole conversation. She goes,
oh, that's right.
She goes, why do I have to wear all this again? And he goes, because you're scripted to do a striptease at the slumber party. And when you take off your top, Billy comes running. She goes, but why does he hate my boobs? And then she pauses and goes, it's because they're not big.
And that's exactly how she says it, with like the pouty mouth and everything.
Right. Well, and then they talk about how they have to have a new final girl. They're like, we need a final girl. And Vicky nominates herself. And Chris looks at her and goes, well, you're not a virgin. She goes, I am too a virgin. I technically am. That, whatever. What does it matter? Gertie goes, because it does, Vicky. You have to be a virgin in this movie in order to kill Billy, okay? And she goes, the only true blue virgin here is Max. And Max looks at Gertie confused. She's like, wait. Gertie, you're a virgin. She goes, well, not anymore. She goes, remember that guy last summer, the one with the weird mustache? And like, she looks at her, and then freaking Vicky goes, isn't he autistic? And she goes, yeah, but he's romantic too. And that's when Blake goes, I like. Like, he gets all excited.
Which I also read that Gertie, the actress, I forget her name, mm-hmm. was thought that the way that line was scripted was a little too harsh and offensive.
I agree.
So she ad-libbed it, and the director was really impressed.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. Like, she added that whole, like, romantic part to it, and, you know, and just the way she responded, rather than, like, looking, like, it said something about the way she wanted her character to respond, rather than looking, like, embarrassed and ashamed, it was more like, yeah, but so what? He's also romantic.
Right.
You know, which I thought was cool. It was definitely a cool improv.
And he's probably got a better barbell than Kurt. What?
Oh, man. So they're talking about how they need to get Billy's machete so they can kill him, because that's the only thing that can kill him. So Nancy speaks up and says that she can be the final girl. And Vicky looks at her and she's like, no, you can't be. You're just the girl with the guitar and the clipboard. You're part of the body count, which is just fucking brutal. And then,
well, let's face it, Vicky is kind of, no, she's not kind of, she is the real fucking bitch in this movie.
Right. She does have a redemption arc, though.
She does. But like, most of the movie, I just wanted to kick her in the face.
I just pictured you fucking ninja kicking her in the face.
That's what I picture too. Like, but fucking Tommy, but I'm not wearing Fred sneakers. I'm wearing fucking Doc Martens, like steel toe Doc Martens, and I ninja kick her in the face and then whoop, kick her in the baby maker just for being a dumb bitch.
Oh, right in the baby maker.
Oh, I'm picturing like a superhero.
I was picturing Tommy from Friday the 13th, part 5.
That, I mean, that works too.
So yeah, so Nancy goes running out crying and Max follows after her. And then there's kind of a touching moment between the two of them where they're like sitting in the forest talking about this whole thing. And Max is trying to convince her that, you know, she's more than just the girl with the clipboard and the guitar. And Nancy's talking about how stupid she was to think, like, you know, that Kurt liked her, and had to think, basically she's going on about how stupid she feels. And she goes, "I should have realized there was something wrong with this camp. What kind of summer camp has water beds?"
Which is very true.
Right. And then we cut to them planning their attack, which is Operation Booby Trap, as you mentioned.
Booby Twap. I Booby like Twap. Booby Twap.
So then we get the preparation montage where we see them, like, they're getting arrows out of the from the archery range. You know, they're cutting down part of the totem pole. They're gathering up kerosene, like they're setting a bunch of shit up. They're gathering all of the antlers from the around the cabin and nailing them to the door. So then we cut to Vicky, Max, and Gertie on the docks carving spears.
And also have in that montage Chekhov's bear trap.
Ah, yes, that's
which
true.
I looked at Shane. I said, "Where the fuck did they get a bear trap?" He's like, "It's a camp." I'm like, "What kind of camp did you go to when you were a kid?"
Yeah, the one I went to didn't have no bear traps, at least that I saw. Right. Because you know some dumb kid would have stepped on it.
Exactly. Maybe that's why you don't know that there were any bear traps. Because right. The kid that stepped on it was the quiet one that no one paid attention to. And now he is hunting in the woods, living in a shanty that's kind of in between Jason and Billy.
Wow, he's had a really uneventful summer this year, then.
Real sad. Well, I mean, yeah, it's sad.
Think of the slashers. Look at, even COVID has screwed over the summer camp slashers.
Oh my God. All the slashers are going to have to do an equivalent of Jason Takes Manhattan now.
They're all going to have to come to the big city.
Right. Oh, fucking disgusting. Wear a goddamn mask.
Cropsy in the big city.
Right.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. I'm picturing his disfigured face just looking up at Times Square and people just throwing change at him, just thinking he's homeless. Like, it ain't no thing. It's just a Friday night in Manhattan.
Do you remember the opening credits to that show, That Girl?
Yes.
I'm picturing Cropsy in that.
Oh, my God.
Riding on the train and, like, in the city.
But at the very end, it's like the end of the Mary Tyler Moore Show theme where he just, like, spins around and throws up a hat and then catches it. And they're like, "You're gonna kill them after all. Do, 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 do."
He throws his shears up in the air. Freeze frame.
Oh. And he's got a big toothy grin like Mary Tyler Moore. Oh, my God. We have to make this sitcom happen.
Holy shit, that's funny. I want to see this now. That is too good.
Somebody please do a drawing of Cropsy at the end of the Mary Tyler Moore. Like, do it as a montage, like panels, do it as a comic. The That Girl theme, and then at the very end, just Cropsy throwing up shears like he's Mary Tyler Moore. He's gonna kill him after all. It's all good. COVID ain't going to hold him down.
Oh, this is fantastic.
Ain't no one going to break his stride. Ain't no one going to hold him down. Oh, no. He's got to keep on killing.
Oh.
And I went into this thinking I have no musical number to contribute this week.
Well, we had a jingle and now we got that.
Exactly.
Oh, man. So,
the power of ad lib.
We get Vicky, Max, and Gertie on the docks carving spears. And Vicky starts crying. And they're like, are you okay? And then Gertie turns around and she goes, Vicky turns around and goes, Gertie, I'm sorry for that time in junior high when I told everyone to start calling you Bachunkadonk and then I covered your locker in bacon. She goes, that was so crappy and I'm so sorry. I'm such a bad person. And Gertie goes, you're not. It's okay. If it makes you feel any better, last summer I'm the one that spread the rumor that you had a weird disease where you were always on your period. And she goes, wow, that's just evil. And she goes, thank you.
Also, the fact that she covered her locker in bacon is a gross misuse of bacon.
Oh, I totally agree. But that's also pretty horrifying to, like, you know, have, like, uncooked slimy bacon all over your locker.
Right, because you can't eat it after you cook it. You gotta just throw that shit out. And then you're the kid who has the bacon touch, which is the cousin, the third cousin, three times removed from your stepmother's great aunt's father-in-law's side of the family. Yeah.
Exactly. So then Vicky apologizes to Max, and we get a little bit of a history between them. She's like, you know, when your mom died, like, I didn't write down the whole conversation, but basically she's like, when your mom died, you just, you withdrew, you cut me out of your life. And she's like, and I really missed you. She goes, and then you two became friends and I was on the outs and I was jealous, you know, and they basically kind of patch things up. And then Vicky says, so, you know, if I'm going to die tonight, you know, I don't want to die without, you know, you knowing how much I cared about you. And, you know, Max is like, you're not going to die. And she goes, I'm the mean girl in an 80s horror movie and we're past the midway point. I'd say I overstayed my welcome. And then the group kind of hugs and, you know, pretty touching moment. And then we cut back to Tina trying to take her clothes off again. And they stop her. And they're like, no sex. And she goes, who can think about sex when I have this rad gadget? And she holds up the iPhone. She goes, what is this thing anyway? And they go, it's a phone. And she laughs and goes, yeah, please, I'm not that gullible. Hello, operator. Yes, I'd like to make a call, but I can't because my phone isn't plugged into anything. And they all just look at her and walk away. And then they gather up their weapons and get prepared. And we see Tina finds Vicky's Adderall. So it's dun, dun, dun. She gets the cap off and we cut away. And we get another touching moment between Nancy and Max where they're up in the loft of the cabin and they're kind of discussing, you know, how she doesn't want to die. You know, she's just a movie and this, that, and the other. And she's like, well, maybe you don't have to die. And she goes, you know, maybe we can save you. She's like, we're in this movie. Maybe we can take you out of the movie. And then there's like this whole back and forth where they come up with a plan where Max is going to try to save Nancy and bring her to the real world. I mean, it's kind of sad because it's like she's just desperately trying to get her mom back. But so the group comes to get them and says we have a bit of a situation and we cut to Tina spazzing out. She took all the Adderall.
Which she calls Tic Tacs.
Yeah. She goes, how many did you have? She goes, three. No. Eight. No, 30. They're like, oh, God. And then Vicky goes, well, maybe this might help. She'll be really focused now. And we see a fly fly by and she just zooms, like hones in on the fly and starts watching it go around the room.
And that was ad lib too.
Yep. Apparently that was a real fly.
Brilliant.
So then they all get to their stations and we have Nancy standing by the music, Blake and Gertie upstairs by the totem pole, which they have strung up on these ropes. And then Max and Chris is right by the door. Max is back by the kitchen. And then they go, unleash the beast and cue Warren's cherry pie.
And Tina just like marches up. And I read that the actress like drank a bunch of energy drinks.
Yes.
To like get kind of cracked out. And that whole thing she just like did from being cracked out on energy drinks, which was fucking hilarious.
She looked so angry while she was stripping. Like, she had her teeth gritted, and she was just swinging articles of clothing around and, like, whipping them across the room and, like, stomping her feet.
If you think about it, this entire movie, Tina has been, like, the embodiment of feminine hypersexuality. Right. So she's been, like, fucking the ground, tree stumps, acorns, squirrel tails, whatever she can find. And she's been like confined to a life jacket and oven mitts that she tried to literally chew her way out of, as we saw earlier.
Yes.
So she's just got all this Adderall in her and all this pent up sexual energy. And she's just like, I don't know what to do with this.
I'm going to
fucking I have the power.
Oh, my God. It,
her dance really does, especially when she like throws herself on the ground and like rides around and then flips over. I'm like, I've been to a few college parties back in my 20s where there have been girls so fucked up on whatever that this really is how they act. So this is totally believable to me.
It's completely accurate.
Exactly. Like, I don't care if it's Adderall, energy drinks, booze, whatever you did. I have been to parties where people have behaved in that fashion after excessively consuming drugs and or alcohol.
Oh, man.
I also want to say that I have never been one of those people.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think of all the parties that I've been to with you, I've never seen you act like that.
No, I mean, I've done a keg stand or two in my time in college, but I have never acted like a crackhead.
No. Oh, shit. So she's flopping around like a fish on the floor. And you got the door is wide open and she's dancing in front of the door, like waiting for Billy. She stands up and she looks back and forth, kind of nervous. And then she yanks up her top and goes, ay, 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 ay. And as soon as she shows her tits, Billy starts approaching in the distance. And
but he like materializes out of nowhere and he gets so close so fast.
Yep. Again,
because they're like, Tina, move. Tina moves. She's like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Well, no, because he goes, she's like, he's so close. And Chris goes, he goes, hold your position. Because they're trying to get him to come in so they can trap him. And then Tina goes, I can't. And she turns and she runs. And that's when she trips and face first into the fucking bear trap.
Death by bear trap.
You know, and the funny thing is, like, I've only ever seen, and I'm sure there's more of them, but I've only ever seen one other thing that did face first into a bear trap. And that was one of the Masters of Horror. It was the one called Pelts. And a guy shoves his face into a bear trap. And it was fucking disturbing.
That's going to be a painful way to go.
Oh, I imagine so. Ugh, gross. But
I do think that she's so hopped up on Adderall that it overrides the death.
Right.
I think that she was still alive. And like... kicking for at least another 2 hours.
They just left her.
Yeah.
But so Billy walks in after her. Chris slams the door shut and yells now. And Gertie cuts the rope holding back the totem pole. The totem pole slams into Billy. And you see on the back of the door that Chris now closed all the racks of antlers. So Billy gets slammed into the antlers and is impaled. Everyone's all excited.
Oh, that was a pretty sweet Scooby-Doo trap.
It was.
It really was. And then you see Gertie and Blake all excited. They kiss. And Blake grins and we get the big braces grin. And he goes running downstairs to get the machete from Billy so, you know, they can use it to kill him. And Billy wakes up, stabs Blake, killing him. The screen kind of spirals as they all run into the kitchen. And, you know, Gertie's screaming, you know, Chris grabs her and pulls her into the kitchen. Billy hops down off of the antler rack and starts following them. And in the kitchen, they have these marshmallow arrows, like arrows with marshmallows on the tip that they're soaking in kerosene. They light them. They shoot Billy. So he's got lit arrows now all stuck to him. And they run upstairs, like kind of leading him to another trap. And when they run in the run upstairs, we see in one of the bedrooms, Gertie and Vicky have stationed themselves to pull this wire connected to a bucket of kerosene over the door. Nancy, Chris, and Max start to climb out the window. Billy comes in, Vicky and Gertie yank the wire, and it doesn't move. And they're like, crap! And then Heath knocks over the bookcase on top of them and pins them. Max tries to go back to help. Billy stabs down, killing Gertie. Vicky looks at Max and tells her to just go. She grabs Gertie's hand and then she yanks as hard as she can on the string or the wire and the bucket falls down, landing on Billy. Now we get, I love this scene, we get a fucking fireball shoots out of the room. So my question here, they were going to pull the kerosene down on him, but they weren't like by the window when they did this. So wouldn't they have died anyway with the way that fucking blew up?
I mean, plot.
Right. So they end up, you know, like I said, the friggin' slow motion explosion fireball. And we see Nancy, Chris, and Max on the yard outside of the cabin. Like, what's going on? And Max goes, it's slow motion. So they're trapped in slow motion. And we see slow motion Billy on fire come flying out of the window and land in the yard and look up at him. They all get up to run. And again, this whole scene is in slow motion. And they're just trucking along all slow. Billy's getting closer and closer and closer. And they come up to like a muddy ditch on the trail. And they all go to jump. And as soon as Billy touches Chris's foot, it speeds back up and they all fall right down into the ditch. So now we get Billy looming over them. And
go, do you ahead. Know what the song that was supposed to be in that scene was?
No.
Burning Billy brings barbaric batterings and the killings. Dying, ooh, dying, ooh, dying at the campground.
Nice.
Man, I really didn't think that I was going to have any musical numbers this week, but they just come to me.
We're going to have to do a second musical montage.
We should.
But so now they're trapped in the ditch with Billy looming over top of them. And freaking Max and Chris tell Nancy, they're like, tell the story again. Tell the story about Billy. We need a flashback. And she's like, wait, what? And they force her to tell the origin story again. The world starts to melt around him. And we flash back again. It's a summer of 1957. It's Nancy, Chris, and Max standing like kind of off to the side. And then we see Billy standing in the road looking at him. And that's when the car crashes into him and he goes flying through the summer of 1957 lettering and like spills the letters everywhere. So he drops his machete. Max grabs it. And now they witness again the prank on young Billy. They see him running away and they follow him. And they end up following him to an old abandoned part of the camp. And Nancy comments, she's like, I don't know this part of the camp. And we hear her voice over it. She goes, oh, God, is that what I sound like? Which that cracked me up. But like, so they see now where Billy hides out. Like they get a glimpse of his hideout. And we see adult Billy walking up toward them. And he's got a knife in his hand. And then they're like, you know, end the flashback, end the flashback. So she finishes telling the story and then it ends and they're back in the ditch. Now they're looking around. They don't see Billy at first. And then Billy pops up like on the other side next to them. Chris jumps up and grabs like a stick and smacks him with it. And Billy stabs Chris. So Chris falls over. Max is holding him. And then we hear Nancy scream and we see Billy walking away, like down the trail with Nancy over his shoulder. So Chris is freaking out, or Max is freaking out that she's gone. And Chris is like, he can't, you know, he needs help. So she picks up Chris or kind of helps him walk away from the area. She brings him to this old abandoned church. And Chris tries to convince her that none of this is real. He's like, you can't help her. She's, you know, she's part of the movie. She's going to die. And she's like, well, no, she's not going to die. I can still save her. I can still save her. And he looks at her. He goes, please, I don't want to die alone. And he's like holding his wound. And she says that no one else is going to die tonight. And she gets up and she leaves. She goes to the abandoned part of the cabin or the camp.
And then cue thunderstorm.
Yep. It's well, it doesn't quite start. I thought that was when Nancy walks out.
I think it started thundering. The real storm didn't roll in, I think, until Nancy and Max are back at the church.
Yeah.
But I think that the thunder started rolling when Max was running towards his upscale Airbnb shanty.
Gotcha. Okay. Because I remember I'd written on here somewhere that she walks out into the third act thunderstorm. Because that's a thing.
Third act, thunderstorm.
But so she walks out. She goes to the shanty, and she finds all of these like jars filled with body parts. There's like fingers and eyeballs and whatnot. And she's looking around. She finds dead Mimi and dead Hiker, and then Nancy tied up. So she ends up, trying to untie Nancy. And while she's untying her, Billy shows up behind her. So Billy and Max try to fight, Max tries to fight Billy. He throws her around like a fucking rag doll. Max ends up getting stabbed. Like, Billy stabs her with the knife. And then Nancy continues to free herself, grabs the machete, and stabs Billy. So Billy falls over, and then Nancy helps Max back to the church.
It really looks like he stabbed her in the uterus.
Kind of does. Oh, man. Ouch. But,
I mean, I've never been stabbed in the uterus, but I bet that hurts.
I would imagine. So they end up back at the church, and we see Max is dying. So she's sitting next to Chris. She's, like, barely alive. And Nancy tells her that she knows how to fix it. She says, basically, she's like, you're not the final girl yet because I'm still alive. Max realizes what her plan is, and she tries to convince her not to do it. And she says, I'm not supposed to be the final girl. I'm just the shy girl with the clipboard and the guitar, remember? And she tries to tell her, or Max tries to tell her, like, what actually is going on. She tells her about how she's her mother, how, you know, she misses her and all this stuff, and basically wants her to live. She goes, you know, I was trying to save you. And she says, you already did. You know, you already let me live more than I ever thought possible. So it's a very heartbreaking and touching moment.
I still get the feels at this part just because, I mean, I'm older now and my mom is older.
Yep.
And just movies like this, and I'm sure as a parent, like movies with children,
mm-hmm.
they affect you more. But like now that I'm older, this scene really, my eyes started sweating because I'm like, what? When that time comes, like, what will I do without my mom?
Trust me, I had the same exact feeling. Cause
oh my God, I'm catching the feels right now.
You're getting a little verklempt.
I am getting a little verklempt.
Well, cause she even says to her, she says, Max, you have to let me go. And like, I was like,
right.
I would put my notes. I'm not crying. You're crying. Shut up.
Seriously. Like that part is so touching and like, I can understand how someone would look at this scene, this fragment, and say, oh, that's so hokey. It's so, you know, so right. Typical. But it really, I don't know, it really did touch me
inappropriately. Well, I mean, and that's the thing that I really do enjoy about this film is that while it plays on all of the tropes and all of the stereotypes, it also genuinely has, you know, heart, and it has a lot of fun humor. So like, it is a very unique blend. And I think that's what makes this movie stand out. But yeah, so she, yeah, because this is where I wrote cue Betty Davis eyes as Nancy walks out into the third act storm, because we see like the lightning crackling in the background.
That and, shot, though, of her walking out and just so her walking out, that's just a beautiful shot. Like, and then the Betty Davis eyes, this part I did laugh at because Nancy doesn't know what Betty Davis eyes is.
Right.
Yet she's still dancing to the song that is only in her head and Max's head, but she somehow knows it.
Right.
And trying and like stripping to bring Billy out to come to her.
Yep. Well, that's the thing. She starts to strip, and the whole time she's like watching Max, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
She's like watching her daughter, like they've locked eyes. But you see Billy approaching in the distance, and then Nancy smiles at Max and blows her a kiss goodbye. And we see Billy appear right behind her. Max turns away. Billy stabs Nancy, and we see a wide shot of Nancy falling over dead right as Max's eyes close and like Max dies. Suddenly they spring open and you realize that Nancy's death gave Max life. So Max picks up the machete and fucking like jumps up. Like
she's, I love this part. Go ahead. She jumps up and she's like, fuck you. And then she says, you just fucked with the wrong virgin. And then it's like a fucking like Jet Li Jackie Chan show off.
Right. She goes running at Billy. They're beating the shit out of each other. Like she jumps on him and is like hacking at him. He picks her up and throws her. Like she like skids on her feet across the wet grass and comes running back at him.
It is straight out of Kill Bill.
Oh yeah. And then like he goes and he hucks the knife at her and she does like a Matrix dodge. She like slides on her knees and like goes back on like limbos under the spinning knife and then like jumps up and hacks Billy's head off. And we see it roll to the ground. And then, like, she's panting, like, standing there, just pissed off. And then she looks up, and we see the credits rolling in the sky.
Yeah.
And then we see Chris kind of stumbles out to her. And he goes, it's over. And they embrace and kiss. And then we watch the credits keep on rolling by. And then we see the legalese at the end of the movie. And Max is like, what's going on? And, and Chris says, hold on, I think it's over. And like the screen starts like bubbling and moving and like they get like this bright white light and then they wake up in hospital beds.
Well, wait, before they wake up in the hospital beds, the lighting bubbles and then they're trapped in like just this shot that says this motion picture is rated R.
Well, that's yeah, that was the legalese. That was right before the all the.
Oh, like, yes, yes, yes.
Way. And then, they wake up in the hospital beds and then we hear our Max hears familiar voices and pulls back a curtain and we see Duncan, Gertie, and Vicky sitting there and Duncan is going on about the tapioca pudding. And they're all alive, but they have their injuries because Duncan's like, no, look, it was all real. And he holds up his gown and we see the stitched side where the machete was and he goes, I'm actually more worried about tetanus because there was a little bit of rust on that machete and I don't think that doctor really gave me a shot.
So. That wound didn't look really, really well put together.
No, that looked painful. But so then Nancy or Max looks down and she sees, oh, that's one part I forgot to mention. When there was like one of the touching moments, Nancy gives Max a friendship bracelet. I forgot to put that in there. So she looks down and she sees the friendship bracelet that Nancy gave her. So like it all happened. And then suddenly they hear the Jason music again. And they look around and they're like, what the hell? And they poke their heads out the door into the hallway like fucking Scooby, like the Scooby gang. They're all looking out. And we see a nurse or a doctor hitting on a nurse. Duncan goes, oh, my God, of course. And we zoom in on a can of Tab, a Rubik's Cube and a plush gizmo, all to ominous music. And they go, of course, what? And then we hear more Jason music and they all turn slowly and look. And we see the title card. Camp Bloodbath 2, Cruel Summer, as Billy leaps through the glass doors wielding double machetes. And Duncan goes, the sequel. And then Max picks up an IV stand, grits her teeth, and rushes Billy. And Duncan goes, this is so great. The sequel is so much cooler than the original. And then we cue Cruel Summer, the credits.
By Bananarama.
Yep.
One thing I want to bring up about the friendship bracelet is when Nancy gives it to Max, it's super big and they're like that looks like one of those I made them when I was a kid. They were like the braided friendship bracelets. There was no option to like make it bigger or smaller.
Right.
It would have fallen off her wrist and then when she's in the hospital it's like, oh, perfect size.
Right. Oh man. But yeah, so during the credits there's a bunch of great outtakes. Like you said, with Kurt in the car with Paula, we see like multiple takes of him trying to get laid, like just ad-libbing. But then at the very, like toward the very end of the credits before they just fade to black, we see a scene of Kurt in the hospital talking to a nurse. And he's like a full body cast except one arm. And he goes, you know, I know it looks bad, but I actually have one bone that's not broken. And then he wiggles his one arm and he goes, talking about this one. My penis is just completely wrecked.
So he's saying he could fist her with a cast on his arm, which would probably hurt. But
I would imagine.
I'm sure that if you looked for it, it's out there.
Right. I mean, rule 34, you know.
Right. I always want to say 42. That's why I just say, I know if you look for it, it's out there.
Well, 42 is the meaning of life.
That's right. That's and, right.
Yeah.
But I'm still not going to remember it. Whatever.
So a bit of trivia. Apparently the writers modeled Nancy after Amy Steele's character Ginny from Friday the 13th Part 2, which after I saw that, or after they after I read that, I was like, I can kind of see that, because Ginny's the one that talks about Jason's backstory. You know, Nancy's the one that talks about Billy's backstory. You know, Ginny was the one that was like the kind of smart counselor throughout the film. You know, so I'm like, I can see that. Then there's just some silly stuff like Nancy and Tina, two of the lead girls in Camp Bloodbath, were named after Nancy Thompson from Nightmare on Elm Street and Tina Gray from Nightmare on Elm Street. But yeah, it said the cast was encouraged to go off script, and a lot of Thomas Middleditch and Adam Devine's improvisations were kept in the actual film. So a lot of their like stupid one-liners were stuff that they made up on the fly. So I was like, oh, good on them, because that was really fucking funny. Like, their dialogue was hilarious. Yeah, and we already mentioned about the fly and the energy drinks, but that I thought was hilarious that, you know, Tina, like you said, Angela Trimber, she improvised that whole dance sequence. But, and this one I thought was cool. The script was originally optioned by New Line Cinema, but the studio wanted to eliminate all of the character moments and the whole mother-daughter subplot. Like, they just wanted it to be, like, a slasher movie where people get stuck in a slasher movie. Which is really dumb, honestly. But it wound up being produced by Sony, and the studio liked the emotional core, but decided to tone down the slasher elements of it, and because they wanted a PG-13 rating. So originally this was more of an R-rated film, but you have the studio that was willing to put it out at R rating. They wanted to cut all the touching moments, and then the studio that wanted all the touching moments wanted to tone down the R rating.
So, I think that they met in the middle, and it was a really good film. So
yeah, I think that they went with the right choice, because if you cut out all of the Nancy and Max subplot, I feel like now you're just basically doing kind of a more comedic version of Scream, you know, a hyper aware slasher movie. That really makes it unique. So, but yeah, I mean, overall, I fucking love this movie. I'm bummed that they never made the sequel, because they were supposed to do the actual sequel, Cruel Summer. So, but it never happened. Would have liked to see more Billy Murphy. But, yeah, so anything you guys want to add here at the, now that we're at the end of the road?
No, just if you haven't seen it, it's not the greatest movie. It's just a fun ride. It's entertaining. It's funny. I mean, come on. If you can't watch a movie and then think about my singing renditions of songs, should you even really watch the movie in the first place?
Truth. Reese, you got anything you want to add?
No. If you have never seen it, watch it. It's a really good movie.
Definitely. So yeah, our social media, for those that aren't following yet, it's we're the Boogeyman's Closet at Facebook and Instagram. Maurice handles our tweets and twitterings, which is
at Boogeyman's The.
Thank you, sir. As I've often said, I am twit illiterate.
That sounds kind of dirty.
Twit illiterate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
Some real
it rolls off the tongue. Twit illiterate.
Twit illiterate.
I don't like that I can say it that fluently.
We are still doing contests. Like I said, I'm going to continue to mention this. Our contest for August is up, and it's super simple. You just have to give us, you know, what was it, 10 movies that I said?
Up to 10, yep.
Up to 10, yes, 10 entries. So you just give us 10 movies that you want to see us cover, and you'll be put into the prize pool drawing 10 times. So we have quite a few entries already, but there's still plenty of time to get in there. We'll be drawing the name at the end of the month, and then we'll have another package for September, right up through to the end of the year. So,
And guys, we have a lot of cool stuff.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah. Like, we've gotten, like, first of all, we started off with a small amount of just stuff that the three of us had kind of collected to give away. And then, you know, a couple close friends had donated a few really cool things. And then as soon as the word got out, like, you guys came out in droves, which I can't thank you guys enough. We've had so much cool stuff donated to give away. Everyone seemed to really like the idea of having, you know, a little giveaway every month and just something to look forward to because this year has been so shitty. So, again, thank you guys. You made this much better than it ever could be. So, yeah, keep your eyes on the social medias. We're going to have a lot of fun giveaways.
And so, also, I just want to add that if you are an artist, if you do art, if you have a friend who does art or music, and you would like us to give a plug, message me with your information, because I have a couple friends whose bands I've plugged a couple times. So absolutely, if you want to get the word out there, 2020 has been hard on all of us. We're all about supporting local music, local artists. So reach out to me directly if you want your band, your art, whatever, and I will post that on our Facebook page and share it with Mike so that he can put it on the Instagram and Maurice on Twitter.
Absolutely. And we said this, I want to say an episode or two ago, I'm losing track of which one we said it on, but we have had a lot of guests recently. And so if you guys out there listening would like to guest on an upcoming episode, especially if you see a movie gets picked that you really want to cover, let us know. Like, don't be afraid to reach out and tell us, because we always enjoy having guests with us. We love to hear other perspectives on the films. So, you know, feel free to ask us, because, you know, we enjoy it. So the more the merrier.
Yep.
But, all right, I think this will wrap it up. We're almost done with our summer camp slashers.
Save the best for last.
Yeah, next week we're going to have sleepaway camp, which I'm excited for. But then, actually, by the time this episode comes out, the votes will be going live for September's picks. I'll be posting that very soon. So definitely check out the social media if you want to have a chance to vote on what we watch next. But all right, guys, I think this is going to wrap it up. So as always, this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.